From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made, say, last weekend at an open house in Rochester. It was a house in one of Rochester's popular neighborhoods, and it was madness. The homeowner's agent had received several offers before the house even happened. The open house didn't need to happen, it turned out. Potential buyers promised they would have an offer ready to go over the asking price, and they declared that they would waive an inspection. Most of the time, that's not exactly the best way to approach buying a house, but have you spoken to anyone who's looking for a house lately? They probably feel tremendous pressure and almost no time to make a decision. It remains a seller's market out there, at least from the many people I've talked to who are working in this industry. But come spring, could that finally change? Our guests are going to help sort through a lot of different questions this hour about what's happening, the state of the market, where sort of the quote-unquote hot neighborhoods are, and what you ought to know if you're buying or selling. So welcome to our guest. Kristen Vanden Brühl is a real estate broker with RE/MAX Plus. Welcome to the program. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Mark Mackey is a real estate broker also with RE/MAX Plus. Hello, Mark. Thanks for being here.
Well, just to clarify, I'm actually with RE/MAX Realty Group, which is a different owned
give me
office.
A break. Yes.
They're owned by different people.
I'm writing my notes here. I did all this homework for the show, and I didn't get that RE/MAX has a realty. What is it called?
RE/MAX Realty Group.
I'm a professional.
Yes.
I just want you to know that I'm a professional broadcaster.
You're
and
right
I'm a
on.
Plus. I'm
you're,
a plus.
You're plus. I'm just a group.
Well, welcome anyway, Mark.
Thank
you very
you.
Much. Also with us is Angie Flack Brown, who's a real estate agent with Keller Williams Realty. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first and foremost, I hope the introduction paints an accurate picture because the amount of stories you hear right now mirror what we've seen in the last 2 years. And I'll just kind of go around the table and ask you if things have changed at all. How much of a seller's market is it right now, Kristen?
It really still is in really all across the board. I suppose on the really high-end stuff, it's not true, but there's not all that many houses on the market.
Sure.
In any of the price ranges. You know, it's just a very, very low inventory, which of course makes it a seller's market.
Okay, what do you say, Mark?
I totally agree. I think that the higher end properties do have a smaller audience, so they are moving at more of a regular pace, but especially our 250,000 and under market, it's just no inventory. So when something does come on the market, it moves along very, very quickly.
Okay, Angie?
You know, what we're finding on our team, we have a buyer specialist that works with us and only works with buyers, and she has a handful or two of buyers last year that couldn't get into houses because of the competition, and they started looking in January or February this year instead of waiting for the spring market. So we're seeing that even though it's not quote-unquote spring yet, we're still finding a lot of people out there competing.
But I imagine that old stereotype is true, though, that there's a much bigger inventory coming in the spring. Yes? No? Is that right?
Yes. I mean, I'm trying to get my clients who were saying, I want to, you know, put it on the market in April, I've been calling them and saying, do it now.
Same,
right.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just because there are buyers out there who feel like there's just no inventory at all right now.
And they're going to definitely benefit if they go ahead now versus mm-hmm. later on.
You right. know, the market will open up in the spring and there'll be a lot more houses listed, but there's going to be a lot more buyers out there too. So why not get it on the market now and be ahead of the curve?
You know, and for our cynical listeners who are here and going, oh, so your guests all want the inventory on the market now. It benefits them. The reason these folks are here, you're all very well vetted as being very upfront and honest with your clients. And I respect that. I appreciate that because houses are not going to have any trouble selling for the most part right now. I mean, we'll get into a little bit more granular about what's going on and what's selling more likely in terms of, you know, hot locations, neighborhoods, parts of our area. But I kind of want you to all take us through what that pressure feels like for some of your clients and what you're telling them. So, Kristen, if you've got a couple who's like, you know, there's a house that looks great. It's in, I don't pick a hot location, South Wedge. It's in North Winton. I love it. There's an open house coming. Do I need to walk in literally with an offer? Do we need to make an offer in advance? Do we need to waive an inspection? Because these are all the things that you hear happening. What are you advising people in those situations?
Don't wait till the open house.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
That's the first thing. So, you know, for houses are going on the market, you know, let's say it goes on the market on Tuesday. One of the first things you have to look at is when are they going to be looking at offers? Is it, you know, is the house going to go on the market and you know, first offer in, or, you know, the seller will look at offers as they come in. Quite often what's happening is a house will come on the market Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and in the private notes it will say that offers will not be reviewed until Sunday night, Monday morning. And obviously the idea there is that they want to collect as many offers as we can, as they can, and also give everyone an opportunity to get in to see the house. And so it's, I mean, it's great when it's a listing where they're not the delayed negotiations, because maybe you're, my buyer has a chance. But when it's the delayed negotiations, you know, unless my buyer's, you know, in some instance, unless my buyer's all cash, willing to waive inspections, then they don't have as much of a chance. And if they're contingent on the sale of a house, that's really tough.
Oof. Mark?
Yeah, I agree with everything that you're saying there. There's they absolutely don't wait till the open house to get in there, because you never know if it'll be gone by the open house. But I also think too, though, that sometimes with the delayed negotiations, that can be good, so that the client actually has an opportunity to go home and think about it and possibly come back and take another
good
look
point.
At the property before they write an offer and they, you know, back out the next morning because they felt pressured, or they, you know, were afraid they were going to lose it. So having the opportunity to think about it can be beneficial as well.
But that's the thing, Mark. That's what I'm hearing more often, is that people feel like, I don't have that opportunity. I have to figure out if we're going to make an offer now or have no chance at all. There's no sort of take a temperature of it, cool it down, rethink it. It feels like everything is now.
Well, right? And it depends on the listing and the agent and what the seller wants to do. If they want to do the delayed negotiations, that does give you the opportunity to think about it. But other agents and their clients will look at offers as they come in. So that is where you would have to act quickly.
Mm. Okay. What are you saying?
So I do primarily listings. I don't work with a lot of buyers. I just work with sellers. And we found last year, before we sort of jumped on this delayed negotiation train, that, you know, we would put a house on the market, somebody would walk in first day, write a full price offer, and my client would be thrilled. And then the next day, somebody would come in with $5,000 more. And then it was $7,000 more. And then you're calling these people saying, sorry, we said you got it, but you didn't. We don't have the attorney approval yet. So it's not technically a contract. You're back and forth. And it's not fair to the seller or the buyers. So for me, having that delayed negotiation period is giving people the breathing room that they want, like Mark said, to really think things through, and keeping kind of an open, you know, it's fair to everybody.
Okay, Mark?
I agree. And I do that with a lot of my listings now. Mm-hmm. I do the delayed negotiation and do a couple of open houses prior to looking at offers, so they have that opportunity.
But is that true? This is the layperson's question. If I were to see that, I would think, come on. In other words, if Kristen's is my broker and mm-hmm. is my agent, and I see that here's a house I really want, but it's listed as a delayed negotiation, as you put it?
Yes, that's what we call it.
I would say, come on, you can't make one phone call and say, look, we're going to give you 10 over the asking, just shut it down. That doesn't happen?
Well, it happens, but it's a question of whether or not that seller and that agent are going to honor the fact that they posted online that it is delayed negotiations.
Right. Yeah.
Ultimately, it's up to the seller to decide whether they're going to take it or not, or how they want it. Am
yeah,
I right about that?
Yes. It's up to the seller.
The seller can say, you know what, I don't want to show the house anymore. We've already had, you know, 14 people through the house. I don't want to wait till Sunday. You've got this great cash offer for $10,000 over. Let's just take it and shut it down.
Right.
Yeah.
They can do whatever they want. They're the seller.
We don't see that. Frankly, I haven't seen that happen a whole lot.
Legally, it could, though.
No. But legally.
You could.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm asking is I'm trying to figure out, for people who may be in the market to buy a house, and listeners, as we go throughout this hour, whether you're thinking about buying or selling, we'd love to hear about your experience lately. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. I'll ask all three of you. If I'm trying to buy, what might give me an advantage? Kristen?
That you're Evan Dawson.
No, not me. The general me. That's a terrible answer.
You got it.
Do I have to waive an inspection, for an example? And do you advise to be willing to waive inspections?
Well, one thing I've done is, because, you know, especially if you're a first-time buyer or really any buyer, there, you know, it is a nervous thing to buy a house without an inspection. What I've tried, doesn't always work, is that we put a clause in there that says, you know, we're going to have an engineer's inspection, but we're not going to ask the seller to do anything, any repairs or give any credits for anything less than, say, $2,000. So that we're not looking for the little things to come on the market, you know, the little things that come up in inspection. We're looking for some big thing that, you know what, I can't buy this house because there's, you know, a major crack in the foundation. It's going to cost me $10,000 to fix it. So I think in that case, it feels a little bit less risky to the seller that, you know, this person's not going to just back out because they, you know, found a, I don't know, some
crack doorknob.
Sure.
Crack doorknob,
sure.
Right.
A couple double tap circuits that cost nothing to fix.
Right.
But it sounds to me like what you're saying is, waiving an inspection means different things. Because I think when people hear waive inspection, that means buyer beware. You know, there's nothing that could happen that you could discover that you would be able to back out if you waive that inspection. Not
right.
True?
Well, that's so to a seller, the waiving of the inspection, that's, you know, that's number one. You know, they love those because then, you know, because a buyer can have an inspection, and once they're at that inspection, it really doesn't matter if anything comes up in the inspection. They can just decide to get out of the deal.
Correct.
And so it gives, by having it waived, that's one more secure step for the seller in knowing that their house is sold.
And then the seller doesn't have to worry about any deficiencies that were found in an inspection. If their first offer didn't come together, they'd have to disclose that. And so by not having the initial inspection, they don't have to worry about that.
It just sounds, again, to the person who doesn't work in this field, it sounds like when we talk about waiving inspection, that's a way to get lemons to sell that ought not sell. No?
Mm.
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, we don't ever, ever, ever recommend to our clients not to have an inspection.
Correct.
Right.
However, if you are purchasing a $250,000, $300,000 house, every house has a roof. Every house has a furnace. Every house has a plumbing system. At some point, as a homeowner, you're going to need to replace one of those things, right? So what is going to really go wrong? Like, you have an inspection and you find out, you know, maybe there's a leak here, or maybe the furnace needs a new filter, or there's a little leak in the roof, but it's not catastrophic. It's not like the house is going to fall into a giant abyss and everyone's going to, you know, perish, you know? So it's really when we find, what we find on inspections is little nitpicky things, like, you know, a couple of double taps on the electrical panel, or a gutter needs to be reattached. So it's, you know, in my mind, it's never very catastrophic. So have a father come with you, or a contractor come with you and walk through and look at the stuff that they look at on their homes to give you some comfort if you choose not to do an inspection.
Correct.
Or a father, or a mother who just
or a mother.
Or a mother.
That's exactly right.
That's right. That's right. Sorry, I'm speaking from experience here.
A lot of people have that family member. Sometimes it's an uncle or a brother or
everybody's
a dad.
Everybody's got a guy.
But
Everyone's got a guy.
Okay.
A person.
So
true.
Okay. So, but in terms of, let's go back to what gives you an advantage then. So, being willing to waive an inspection might be necessary. Might help. Is there something else that could help?
Sure.
A buyer?
I mean, obviously, if you're a cash buyer, that's also ideal to a seller because then they don't have to worry about the buyer getting a mortgage or, you know, losing their job prior to closing. They can then get out of the deal because they no longer are able to get that mortgage. But if they're a cash buyer, the seller can go ahead and buy a new house and not worry about it. They know that deal's going to go through. Some mortgage companies are now helping. So let's say that you can't go cash. You don't have $150,000 in your bank account because you do have to prove that you have the money somewhere. So some banks are or mortgage companies are with if a buyer has at least 20% down and excellent credit and all sorts of things, then the that mortgage company will let you basically write a cash offer. They'll guarantee that you're going to get that mortgage, so in a sense you can go cash, which is a great thing if you can, you know, work with that.
And be creative with where you get your cash.
Right.
You know, maybe it's borrowing from a 401k and replenishing it later, but be creative.
Right. Yeah, because you can do it for you can take the money out for 2 months out of your 401k. I just had a client do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they were cash. They took the money out of their 401k and only had to use it for like 30 days or something like that. And once their house sold, they just paid right back into it with no penalty.
Which also speaks to making a an offer contingent on the sale of a house. If you can use that those kind of funds to get a mortgage without having to sell your other property,
right.
That's going to put you in a much better place. I honestly, unless the property has been on the market for a long time and there's some reason that it's not selling, I haven't seen an offer go through with a contingent sale or, a contingent on the sale of another property in a long time. So,
wow. Yeah. Other thoughts on any other ways to get an advantage?
Well, I would just say, in general, be really, really educated. When mm-hmm. you're a buyer, work with an agent that is really going to give you those tips up front. I mean, we always tell people, definitely make sure you're pre-qualified. Maybe go to a couple different places to get pre-qualified. Because sometimes the difference in $50 a month is going to get you a house or not. Find out where you're looking and what does that competition look like? Because a lot of times we have, buyers that go out, they find a house, they love it, there's six offers, and they're not prepared to make that strong offer because they think, I'm going to offer less price. That should be enough. They really need to know what's going on out there so they're not losing things over and over.
Yeah, Mark had a pretty visceral reaction when you said I might just underbid it. If you actually want something right now, mm-hmm. do you ever advise your clients right now to underbid?
Not when it's first on the market. I mean, I shouldn't say that is a definitive answer.
Right.
But
there's always going to be cases, right?
Correct. But I mean, I think it would be very hard to get an under-asking price offer through mm-hmm. within the first week of a listing.
So we got very lucky last week. We had a client that wanted to write a contingent offer on a property that was in the outskirts in Clarkson. Hmm. And there was 33 people at the open house. And the next day we called and the guy said, I didn't get any offers. So she wrote, my buyer's agent wrote a contingent offer that was accepted and we sold his house and happy ending. But that's, it's the area, I think. And it was a farm home and it was a little bit unique.
Oof. Yeah.
Well, here's an example. Pablo writes and says, Evan went to buy a house a couple of years ago and it was painful. Says, I've always heard that upstate New York has high taxes, but at least you get a lot of house for your money. And I feel like right now that may be changing. That's from Pablo. So I don't know. You still getting a lot of house for your money? If you're comparing this to Manhattan,
of course you
are. But is Greater Rochester, Western New York losing some of its advantage with that? Because Pablo's making an important point. There's a lot of talk about property taxes. And there's no doubt when you just look at that raw number, we have very high taxes. But if you get a lot of house or a lot of home for your money or for your rental, that's a really important thing. And if that is starting to change, Pablo's just sort of being a little cheeky, but I mean, it's saying, is it changing? And like, is the market so extreme that that's starting to change? Is that still a ways away? Would you say you get a lot for your money?
I think we're catching up to the national average. We've been behind for quite a while. Buffalo started off a few years ahead of us. Buffalo's market increased, maybe 2012, 2013 they started. We're just catching up.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Is that a problem? Is that just sort of a fact of life?
It's healthy. It's good.
Yeah.
There's still opportunities out there.
Yes.
There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still some houses out there. One of the things to keep in mind is there's a lot of investors out there that are buying these houses. And they're snapping up houses in the city, in East Arundecoit, and they're either keeping them to use as rentals or they're flipping them. And that has, I think, put some pressure on our market. And some of those areas that weren't selling as well, I think they've started to bring those areas mm-hmm. up.
Yes. The investors identified those as being good locations to do that, for sure.
Okay. Pablo, thanks for that note. We'll read more. If you want to email the program and tell us about your adventures thinking about buying or selling a house, it's connections at WXXI.org, or you can call the program and tell us. And I, sort of mentioned at the outset, it's a big seller's market, generally speaking, right now. But all three of our guests have a number of years working in this field. Have you ever seen more of a seller's market where we are right here than in the last, say, 2+ years here? Kristen?
Oh, I think it's the same. I mean, I think the last 2 years have been the same.
Right, but if you take that as a period of time in your entire career, is this the biggest seller's market that you've seen?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
No question?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I'm not nearly as old as these two.
I don't have a kid in college, so there you
well,
go.
Well, there's a reason. but this is definitely, for me, the same thing. I would agree.
Well, Gary writes the program and says, did I miss something? Are there banks that will grant a mortgage without an inspection?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It has nothing to do with the bank.
Yeah,
the
banks, there's two things. There's an appraisal, which is a bank going, having a inspector, not a what's an appraiser?
They're looking for value.
They're looking for the value. They're not looking for the inspection is your decision. The bank doesn't care one way or the other.
No. Okay. So, Gary, yeah, the answer is, yeah, you can definitely get a mortgage without an inspection. And so that brings us to a question of, are there parts of our area, whether it's the city of Rochester, different neighborhoods, different towns, where you are seeing more consistently solid historic homes, better homes, or homes that more consistently have problems, either with foundations, et cetera, building, anything that stands out? Avoid this, or red flags here or there. You hear a lot about the hot city neighborhoods continue to be. We hear about a lot about South Wedge. We hear a lot about North Winton. You know, I'm curious to know.
Well, I mean, North Winton Village is just really, really hot. And that's only true the last 2 to 3 years, don't you guys think?
My first house was in the North Winton Village. Yeah. And we paid $62,000 for the house, turned around and sold it 7 years later for $90,000. And I think if I put it on the market tomorrow, it'd be a $145,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really taken off.
Yeah, there was a house, I had a client write an offer on a house in North Winton Village last weekend. They were asking $189,900. It sold for $215,000. And there was nothing in North Winton selling over $200,000. I mean, that's just starting to break that $200,000 now, I think, this year. I don't think it happened a whole lot last year.
No.
Depending
on
the area.
Noticed that, too, that price point.
See, that's kind of depressing to me. But then again, from the perspective of city health, you're all saying that could be sort of, again, catching up to national averages and maybe something that's more appropriate. So do you expect to see the trends of the last 2 years favoring the sellers changing anytime soon? Is this mostly an inventory question? Are we going to sort of max out at a certain point here? Because I remember talking about this on the program 2 years ago when the changes really were kind of taken off and people going, well, you know, give it time and everything kind of corrects itself. And I don't know if we've maxed out where prices are going.
Well, I think some of it's going to depend on what happens with interest rates, even though our interest rates, we were talking about this before we went on the radio. I mean, our interest rates are really low compared, you know, I was saying my first house, I bought a for sale by owner, but we're talking.
Why did you gasp? Why did you gasp?
Because that's
Send her away.
Actually, wait a minute. That's not exactly true. It was listed, and it was there was a tenant in there who'd been in the house for 20 years, and the seller was in California. And he held a mortgage for me because I really didn't qualify for a mortgage. It was a house in Pittsford Village. I paid $45,000 for it.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah, that was 34 years old.
You couldn't get a garage for that much.
I didn't have a garage. I did not have a garage. It was a two-bedroom house. And I paid $45,000 for it. And the seller in California held the mortgage at a really great rate of 12.5%. You know, but today's, you know, the millennials, they're looking at 5.5 or 5, and they're thinking, wow, this is really high. But, you know, it's still relatively
it
low.
It really is.
You know, so, but I think if they continue to creep up, you'll have some people say, I'm going to hold on and wait and see what happens. Do you guys agree?
I think there's people that are thinking that way, but I don't think that they're going to shoot up through the roof this year at all. I don't think that should, I'd like to think that my clients aren't being held back because of the interest rates, because they are still reasonable.
But
there still is the lack of inventory, and I'm not sure if that's going to change. I mean, there's obviously, you know, in Rochester, traditionally, we have a couple of real big pushes when it comes to getting houses on the market. That'd be the spring and the early autumn. And I think that's true. I think we're always going to see that. But I've seen in the last few years, because there's such low inventory, that people are out looking year-round, whereas they weren't. They were focusing on different times of year before. And I also think that, you know, there's some factors that are affecting the reason why there aren't other houses on the market. You know, the people are staying in their houses. They're not moving, you know, whereas before, you know, the mature population, my mother's probably listening and wondering what I'm saying, but the mature population are staying in their houses and making accommodations to do so. So those are not on the market anymore. So there's all sorts of different factors that are contributing to why there aren't a lot of properties.
I think also along with the shortage of properties is we also have an influx of buyers. We've got the millennials that are buying their first homes, and we've got the baby boomers that are downsizing. And they're all looking in the same price range.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
A lot of competition.
A lot of competition.
For not a lot of inventory. Mm-hmm. Byron writes to the program and says, "Hi, Evan, would you please ask your guests about writing a personal letter to the sellers? When my wife and I bought our house a couple of years ago, our realtor suggested doing that, and ultimately that's why the sellers chose us over an otherwise similar offer. But is this legal?"
Too bad we're on the radio because we're all smiling and laughing and you can't see it.
Yeah.
Why? What's happening?
We call them love letters.
Love letters. Yeah, we call them love letters. And
they're legal?
No.
They're not legal.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
They were then.
Oh,
but
interesting.
But they put a kibosh on that. Mm-hmm.
They did.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Well, because it could give an unfair advantage to somebody by writing that letter that would affect the
Like putting a picture
legality.
Of the family.
Correct.
And maybe, they choose the family that looks most like them to buy their house.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not just about trying to woo somebody. It's concerned about possible discrimination.
Correct.
Absolutely.
That's exactly the root of it.
Oh, yes. Okay. See, you know what? I mean, how ignorant and naive can I be here? I should have saw that immediately. But Byron, I appreciate the email. And yeah,
he's right. I mean, we did.
They
it
worked.
All, we,
they were
they
great.
Worked.
It worked.
Oh, we
great.
Did it all. The,
especially
all
with
the
older population.
Correct.
They want to know some young family is going to start and they're going to be there for 50 years.
Sure.
Yep.
To be clear, not to do a little PR for our guests, but what I think I'm hearing our guests saying is the PR, the love letters in the past worked. Not because you're trying to play off of any implicit bias or subconscious bias, but because sometimes people just like to say, oh, okay, this is upstanding people who's coming in here and I can envision them in this house, because it feels very personal to you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Who buys your house sometimes is a very personal thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. But,
absolutely.
But Byron, the answer is no, you cannot do that anymore.
And there still are agents out there, and this happened this week. Someone said, tell me about your buyer, another agent, when I sent over an offer, tell me about your buyer. I said, well, what would you like to know? Well, what do they do? Who are they? I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. I can only tell
legally.
You legally. I cannot answer the question. I can tell you, they're well qualified, and this
but
is.
But you can say that they work at Strong or something.
I prefer not to.
Oh, I know, but we can say that. I mean, you do want to know. I mean, obviously, there's agents out there that do that. Go through pretty good, very good pre-qualifications. Mm-hmm. So we just. Like I wouldn't question you, but if it's an agent I haven't known, and
sure. I mean, there's 2,500 agents out there. We can't know them all, and we can't know what they've done to vet their clients.
Sure. Yeah, or if it's a bank I've never heard of that they're getting their mortgage through, I'm kind of like, can you just give me a little bit of an idea?
But when they say, do they have kids? Are they married?
Yeah, no, I don't ask those questions.
That's right to that writing a letter.
Absolutely, and they're still asking, and they don't get why.
Yeah. No.
Well, on the subject of getting a lot of house for your money, another email from a listener says, just had a long conversation with a young couple who moved here from Seattle 2 months ago. Neither is from here, but they want to start a family and moved here because of low housing cost and quality of life.
Amen.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Seattle housing market's like, but I bet it's more
booming.
Expensive.
Seattle's very, very expensive.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
it's got to be one of the top housing markets.
Yep.
But don't worry, once Amazon decides to choose Rochester now that it's pulled out of New York City.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get the same Seattle effect on prices.
There we go.
Don't worry. I'm not being... we're going to talk Amazon on the program next week, everyone. There'll be plenty more to say about that. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back with Kristen Vanden Brühl, Mark Mackey, Angie Flack Brown as we talk about the state of the local housing market, especially as we head towards spring, traditionally the time when a lot more inventory comes online. Not enough inventory to satisfy all of the possible buyers out there. So it's a seller's market. We're going to talk about a couple of things in our second half hour. I want to ask all of them, when you've got clients who come to you and say, hey, be on the lookout for X. I really want to find a house X. What are the top three places they are hearing? If they had to make a short list of where people say they want to go, that'll help sort of illustrate what's hot out there. And then we've talked a lot about how to give buyers an advantage or what to know. I'd like to know if you're thinking about selling. Obviously, we're sort of framing this as, well, it's easy. Just put your house online and you make $1 million. Not quite the case. And if you want to maximize, they'll help you think about that as well. So let's get that only break and we'll come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about local history, what we do and don't know. New York State K-12 standards don't require any teaching of local history. And a lot of high school graduates head off into the quote-unquote real world without really knowing their local story. SUNY Geneseo professor Michael Oberg is trying to change that with an ambitious plan to pull historians and the academy together. We discuss it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you want to email the program and share your home buying or selling story as we talk about the state of the housing market, you can email connections@wxxi.org, or you can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. What's so funny over there?
My husband just said my radio voice sounds like butter.
That's good. The highest compliment I give a guest is when I say that your voice sounds like if you could bottle it, you could pour it on pancakes.
Oh, that's
beautiful. So yours is close to that.
Syrup, butter.
I might be margarine over here.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, yours is, I can't believe it's not butter.
Thank you.
So let's get some more of the feedback here. North Winton Village on Twitter says, "We are still a hot neighborhood for home sales and rising home prices." That's from the folks over at North Winton Village. So I asked before the break, when people come to you and say, hey, I'm going to be on the market, I would love to be in X, Y, or Z, what is X, what is Y, what is Z? What are the top three that people are asking you to keep your eye on? What neighborhoods, what places, what towns, what parts of Rochester? Kristen?
North Winton Village is very big for first-time buyers. For first-time buyers, I would say, because they you know, everybody wanted to be in Park Avenue, but now they can't afford it anymore. You can't get anything under 200 there, you know, or even higher. South Wedge, that was always very, very hot.
That's
and
moving
still
into
is.
A higher stratosphere of price, isn't it?
That the prices have gone up there. You've also, but when you look at kind of the South Wedge, you're also looking at, you know, over by the university where a lot of those streets right next to the hospital, those sell very quickly. But those are selling a lot to investors who are buying them because they get really high rents.
Yeah.
So I have clients that are just looking in that area for an investment. Right now, I think the market in Pittsford's really tight, really, really low inventory. Angie was, I'm sure, is going to bring up Penfield. She did some research on that one. So Chi-Li is really, for the west side, Chi-Li is doing very well. It's, I think, out in that area, you're seeing a lot of low inventory there, but a lot of people wanting to buy in that area.
Which, you know, in the past, it wasn't as aggressive on the west side as it might have been on the east side. But it's almost as aggressive on the west side, certainly specific areas.
Okay, and so you mentioned Penfield.
So Penfield, yeah, I'm getting ready to list a home in Penfield, and I was doing the absorption rate in the area yesterday to find out, you know, how quickly could we expect this house to sell. And there's 16 houses on the market in all of Penfield right now in all price ranges. 16.
Total?
Total. There's a zero months inventory, which I've never seen before anywhere.
Yeah.
What's that likely to be? What is a typical inventory in Penfield, say, in the spring?
Well, so a normal balanced market, we say that homes should be on the market between 3 and 7 months is what we consider a balanced market. Anything below 3 months is a seller's market. Anything above 7 months is a buyer's market. We're at a zero in Penfield. Zero.
And you've got 16 total homes.
16 for sale.
For sale right now. But again, what's normal? Is there usually 100 homes for sale, 200 homes?
80.
80?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's probably
so we're at one-fifth of the typical inventory.
Brighton has 22 houses on the market, 22 houses on the market, any price range, and I think three of those are specs that they're going to build on Willard off of
the new
Highland.
Highland.
Yeah. So now, you know, that's 19 houses.
In Brighton.
In any price range in Brighton.
And that includes Pittsford Schools, Penfield Schools, and there's some in Henrietta Schools that are in the town of Brighton. It's not just the school district.
Right. So again, that would be much higher than that. 60, less than, it's a smaller area than Penfield, but maybe 60. Yeah.
So Mark Mackey, if a client calls you tomorrow and says, I'm going to buy a house sometime this year, and here are my top three locations, where do you expect them to say?
I say, aren't you going to sell a house too? No. Where are the top? I actually respond to what they want, you know, as far as where the locations are.
Where do you think they're more likely to say right now?
I think that the east side is probably still a really strong area, including things that are in close proximity to the downtown amenities. I think that's really popular. So I think that what you're talking about, the South Wedge is very popular. The North Winton Village is very popular. I think that you can look into a neighborhood. I do a lot of business in the Brighton-Penfield area because of its convenience. And I have a lot of people coming in and asking for, they're just looking to make that transition, like Kristen was saying, from the Park Ave type feeling to something that's still close to that, but within a reasonable price. So,
all right, let's get a little more feedback. Rob is, let's see here. All right. So we got to, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, it's hard to kind of, I don't kind of steer people to certain areas. I definitely respond to where they want to be. So
I got you. Yeah,
if
no,
they
I got
talk
you.
About, if they talk about what they're looking to achieve when they move, you know, as far as the amenities and,
right.
and location, then I can help them out. Certainly.
All right. Well, let's get a couple questions here. Steve wants to know, he says, I live out of town. Should I spend the time and money to do all the minor repairs, painting, et cetera, to my mother's house in Brighton for before selling?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Buyers tend to watch a lot of HGTV, and they walk into a house, and if it looks like it needs work psychologically, they're already out the door, freshening it up, getting some new carpets or hardwood floors refinished. Painting, removing wallpaper does a lot,
mm-hmm.
And first impressions mean a lot.
You get that money back. You're really
Absolutely.
Doing that effort for sure. You get it back if you can.
I agree with you. I think you also need to, in some ways, take into account who your seller is and what is their kind of their motivation. Because, you know, I think sometimes agents go in and it's an elderly couple. They've got a house they've been in for 50 years. And to ask them to take all the wallpaper down, mm-hmm. pull up their carpets, refinish the floors, it's just not reasonable. It's too stressful for them.
I totally agree.
You give them a price accordingly and, you know, kind of back in that the buyer's going to have to put right away, you know, $5,000, $10,000, whatever it is, into it and price the house mm-hmm. accordingly for mm-hmm. that. So...
I agree.
But if he has the time and the money and the ability to do that and get in there and kind of freshen up the house, he'll get the money back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on that note, I think that a lot of sellers are afraid we're going to underprice their house. And we have found that the market always adjusts itself. You know, if something is going to sell for $250 and we accidentally price it too low at $240, you're going to have multiple buyers in there that's going to end up selling for $255, $260. So you can't really mess up that much, especially in a hot market like that.
And if you put it on a $275, you might be shooting yourself in the foot where it's a right. $250 house, and eventually you're going to get less than $250 because you put it on at a price too high. An appropriate price is what you need to still put your house in the market for to achieve possibly over asking.
And buyers are very educated, very savvy, and they're going to know if, you know, is it Rob?
Oh, no, that was from Steve.
Steve, if you don't do the work, you're going to have a buyer that's probably going to be willing to do the work, you know? So it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other sometimes.
He also said Brighton.
Well, that's
so
true.
That makes a difference.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah. I used to say it could be on fire and it would sell. You
don't
know?
Vacuum.
I have a house that's intermittently on fire.
Yeah,
but you know,
we'll get that offer in.
But it's walking distance to the library, so there's that.
Yeah, that's right.
Near 12 Corners.
Yeah.
Okay. What else before we get into a pile of other emails, which we've got a lot.
Oh,
so if
cool.
you've
wow.
emailed questions or comments, great. We're going to get to that. But on the subject for sellers, what else do you want sellers to know right now? Because again, we sort of frame this as, well, it's easy times for sellers. It's easier for sellers than being a buyer. What else do you want sellers to keep in mind? Kristen?
I think some sellers think that I guess we'll wait until June to put it on the market. Mm-hmm. June is too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our market slows down in July and August. So you really want
it's going to sell, I think, is the point. But it sounds like it sounds like if you want to get top dollar
and more people,
don't wait till June.
Looking. Don't wait till June. Do it. You know, sooner rather than later. The market, September is always a great month. Also, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying don't put your house on the market in July or August. It's just that you find way more buyers in that spring market. Mm-hmm. And in September. I don't know if you guys feel the same.
No, yeah. I do. Absolutely.
People want to get in before the holidays.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or the summer events mm-hmm. of the kids.
Mark, Angie, any other thoughts for sellers?
Ladies before.
Oh, you're so
nice.
I would just say, you know, the elephant in the living room, you know, we're talking about how great and easy it is to sell houses right now. And so lots of sellers are thinking, I can do it myself. For sale by owner. And I've seen it happen, and I've seen people lose tens of thousands of dollars because they didn't actually know the market.
You know, the journalist, my job is to roll my eyes at you and say,
away.
Course you're all going to say don't sell it on your
course,
own.
And of course you're going to question it.
Of
so.
Course I am.
As
That's my
should.
Job, and I like all of you. That's why I called you. But of course you're going to say you can't sell it
but
on your own.
But we've got data.
You're saying that the data backs up
sure.
what you're saying.
87% of people who put their house on the market themselves end up hiring a realtor,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what the statistic is after that, but it sells for more with realtors because you can bring – it's the supply and demand economics, you know? It's just what it is. Prices go up when there's more buyers.
Okay.
And
more exposure. You get more exposure mm-hmm. when it's listed.
Much more.
Yep.
Okay.
And some buyers are afraid to go directly to a seller. They don't
Absolutely.
Feel comfortable.
Yeah.
They just
– Absolutely.
They won't even touch it.
That's interesting.
Well, they want the buffer of the realtors.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
James writes to us and says, why the low inventory on multifamilies for investors?
Because people want to invest in the people that have bought those in the past are holding on to them.
Right.
They don't want to give them up because it's a good investment for them and a little bit less scary than the stock market, which
right,
we all know
cash
took a few
flow.
Dives.
Yeah.
So
I think also they used to sit on the market a little bit longer. And so it seems like the inventory is lower. They're just selling quicker. So if something
Good
was
point.
On the market for three months before, yeah. it was like, oh, there's a bunch of them, and now they're just going fast.
Yeah,
so, they're going fast, but there may be fewer of them out there because if you have a property right now that pays for itself with rental income, mm-hmm. that's like having gold.
Right. Why would you give it up?
Yeah. And the values are going up, you
yep.
know?
Jared says, how long do your guests expect these market conditions to hold out?
Wouldn't it be nice if we had a crystal ball?
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, we always like to study the national market. And like I said, we're usually a few years behind the national market. And it's, you know, big cities are still strong. You're looking at, you know, anywhere in Texas, Boston, California, Florida, they're still strong.
But we've mm-hmm. never had the highs and lows of no. some of these other places. So we're, you know, pretty flat.
We're going, yeah.
We're better than yeah. we've been, that's
right.
for sure.
Yeah. So that was a great team dodge of the question.
oh, do we dodge a question?
Well, no. I mean, like the bottom line is nobody can possibly tell you exactly how long these conditions are going to hold or if they're going to level off. But maybe I'll reframe the question. If we're sitting here in a year and in 2 years doing the same show, are we still talking about it going straight up?
I think so because we don't have enough new building going on.
Okay.
You know, some
okay.
of the areas you can't build, you know, where are you going to? Right now, they're building in Brighton, but it's like $400,000 and above. You know, we don't have enough.
The cost of building is high.
Yeah, the cost of building is high. We don't have enough new building going on in the $200,000
yeah.
price range.
Right.
So there's limited. There's always going to be a tight inventory, I think.
I think also you're looking at that millennial population and. You know, there's another 10 years left before that,
right.
whatever the next generation is called. And
it's
they're
Gen Z.
Okay,
Gen
the Gen
Z.
Zs are, you know, eating pudding right now. And,
but they're in college.
And the Raymond.
They're going to college.
But yeah, I think that, you know, those there's a lot of people. You know, part of our biggest buyer pool right now is single women in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
used to wait, like, let's get married. Now they're buying houses. And I think that people are catching on
That's
that
a
it's a
point.
Great investment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bob in Fairport says, 27-year Fairport homeowner thinking of selling. Is property tax assessment value a good indicator of sell value?
Not at all.
Not even close.
Not even close.
No, especially for somebody who's been in a house for 27 years,
mm-hmm.
because their assessment probably has not adjusted as you know quickly or as high as other houses in the neighborhood that have turned over.
I agree.
So, you know, we just went through a reassessment in the town of Brighton, and I sat on the assessment board, and it was the variation in assessments. You know, you'd have a house that the people have been in there 30 years, and the house is assessed for, you know, $250,000, and they're upset because it's assessed at $250,000, and we're sitting there, a lot of us are realtors on that board, and we're like, yeah, but if you put your house on the market tomorrow, it'd be $325,000, so you should be happy with that $250,000 assessment right now.
Right.
You know? So I think the longer you're in the house, the less likely your assessment would be the true value of your house, don't you?
And also, you know, when was the last time that the town had done across-the-board reassessment?
And I don't know when Fairport did, but what if it's a year ago? Is that likely to be closer or still not?
Closer, but probably not still.
Still driven by the market.
Don't use that mm-hmm. assessment.
No, just like don't use Zillow either. I mean, they're just not. You know, they're not.
Well,
they don't have
all the data
they need
to make the pricing. You know, Zestimates that they put out.
Even
there.
The assessor doesn't have all that information.
Right.
They don't know if the house has a new kitchen unless you let them in your door. You know, or new bathrooms or those types of things. So.
Yeah.
They call it a Zestimate?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
It's zesty.
Yes.
Denise writes to us and says, what are the pros and cons of using the seller's real estate agent as the buyer's agent?
I don't think there's any pros.
There are no pros.
I really don't. I think that you need to have your own representation. The seller's got a contract signed with their client. The seller's agent has a contract signed with the seller saying, I am going to work for you. So how can they work for the buyer at the same time?
I agree, but I think I also kind of look at it as a case by case
as well.
Depends
on the home.
Yeah, it depends on the home and the person and, mm-hmm. and the buyer and the seller. But yes, I think that that's absolutely true. Yeah. I think it's better to have, you know, your roles defined.
People think they're going to get it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Some do. But I also think just, you know, in some cases, yes, they do think they're going to get it less expensive, but I think just as long as an agent is very upfront with both the seller and the buyer, they have to sign something mm-hmm. showing that they are aware that this agent is representing the seller and not the buyer. But I think the agent, is going to try to be fair to both parties.
It's agent dependent for right. sure. Yeah.
I think this market's made it a little bit easier sometimes too, because I mean, if you wrote an offer and there's five other offers and they're all over asking, you know, who's not happy there as far as the mm-hmm. seller's concerned.
Right.
So.
Right.
Okay. So another question from a listener asking about, where was it? On the subject of foreclosures, just asking, do the stats that you have include foreclosures? How does buying foreclosures work?
Well, first of all, one of the things, I'm sure you guys get the same phone calls, they're looking on Zillow and they say, oh, this house says it's in pre-foreclosure or it's in foreclosure. How do we buy it? First thing to know, when something's in pre-foreclosure or foreclosure, it can take 3 years, 4 years for it ever to hit either the market, again, meaning multiple listed, or before it's auctioned off on the county court steps. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever attended, every day of the week, there is a house auctioned on the county steps downtown. Mm-hmm. But you have to be a cash buyer. You don't get to go inside and see the house at all. You have no idea if all the pipes in that house have burst and there's, you know,
it's
rotted wood and mold.
As
and
is.
Yeah. So you've really got to be someone with deep pockets to buy a foreclosure.
A lot of cash.
Ready to
move.
Yeah. To take care of the issues.
Also, what you're talking about, you know, and they do see that pre-foreclosure all over the internet now, and they're calling me, I see this on pre-foreclosure. There's a real high percentage of these pre-foreclosures that go away. So somebody that, you know, they've somehow figured out a way to, you know, get caught up with the bank, and now it's not in pre-foreclosure anymore. And a lot of people do that. So pre-foreclosure will come up when they're behind a month or two or 2 months maybe in their mortgage payments. So it's not very far into the process of foreclosure when you see a pre-foreclosure listing. So, and Kristen's absolutely right. I mean, the other way of getting them is on the courthouse steps, and there's, you know, it's hard to walk in there and buy something as is with cash. You know, I've got some buyers that I go to the courthouse steps with, but they're contractors. They know what they're doing. They can take things as is. They can fix anything that's wrong.
So that's caveat emptor, but they're not scared of it because they can do the work.
And here's the other side of that too. I mean, if someone's in foreclosure, do you think they've been able to financially take care of their home? That's a question to put out there.
And again, that's not a knock on people who've been through foreclosure.
No,
that's
it's
reality
just,
and the challenges of their
correct.
Situation.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Mark writes to us and says, with the new tax law, specifically the limit on SALT deductions, which has a disproportionate effect on residents in high tax states like ours, do they think the housing prices will be affected? Based on the conversation so far, prices are rising, but I wonder how much of this is first-time buyers who might not realize the changes in mortgage interest deduction. It seems to me that one of the advantages of buying over renting has been erased, and I would expect the market to reflect that going forward, weighing in favor of renting versus buying unless the rental prices increase due to increased demand. From Mark.
Different
Mark.
I'll take a stab at that.
Thank you.
Good.
So
I'll give her a knife.
Go for it.
Let's just look at, you know, the basics. If you're renting versus buying. If you're renting and you're paying $1,000 a month, you're throwing away $12,000 a year. You get nothing out of that, right? If you're buying and you're maybe paying $10,000 in taxes and $2,000 toward your mortgage, you're at least either breaking even or making a little bit of headway. So it depends on, you know, what people's perception is of what losing money is, really. Housing costs give us a house to live in, so it's not like you're throwing money away. As far as the taxes go, we've seen a little bit of that on the higher end properties. You know, I have a listing right now that's close to $600,000. The taxes are $30,000. And people are saying, we love the house. The price is great, but if I'm only getting a $10,000 tax deduction, that's still 20 grand I'm out every year. And so I think that, yes, it could happen on the higher end. Anything below, you know, 250, 300, I think they're still pretty.
Right, safe. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a first-time buyer, their taxes, chances are less than $10,000.
Yes.
So I don't think it's affecting that end of the market. I think, as you said, the higher end of the market. But the real high end of the market, they have so much money anyway. I don't know that makes a lot of difference.
Hey, neat. I got a yes or no question for you. A listener wants to know, are agents willing to lower their fees if selling houses in a hot area? It's less work.
Is it?
Is it? That's a great answer, Mark.
Is it really?
It's actually more work.
Yeah,
it's more
I think
work.
So too. I'm now navigating through, you know, like 10 offers and finding the best, mm-hmm. you know, best fit for you.
I spent 2 hours on a Sunday with 16 offers on a table at Starbucks. I had every offer written on a note card, and we had to go through. Normally, you get one offer, it takes you 15 minutes, you move on. Mm-hmm. You know, no.
And if you hired me and we've negotiated how much you're going to be paying me to sell your house, and I sell it at a premium, why are you upset about that?
So yeah, you might even get the amount that some of these houses are selling for over asking price. You might get your commission covered.
All right, you've all convinced me it's more work in the hot areas. Okay. Last question, and I'll direct it to Kristen. In the case where people feel that pressure, buying a home is always pressure. It's a big decision in your life. But even now with increased, you know, pressure in terms of time demands, what would you advise people in our last minute here? What would you advise people who feel like I can't make a decision that quickly?
I think that they're just not ready. Mm-hmm. They need to look longer.
Which is okay, right?
Right. There's nothing wrong with that. Just look longer, take your time, and you'll know it when you see it. If you're hesitant to buy a house, then it's not your house. You will absolutely mm-hmm. know it. I think
you
we
will.
All say that yeah. to people. That there's no hesitation on your part. You'll do whatever you can to get it yeah. the best you can if it's the house you want. If you're hesitating, I always tell people, move on.
I'd also okay.
Oh, no, go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, you know, and I'm a firm believer that if you miss out on one, there's going to be something that's just as good mm-hmm. or better that's coming down the pike for you.
And it's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be stressful. So enjoy it.
Yes. Hopefully we can take some of the stress out of the transaction for people.
I reached out to all of you because I like you. You all have good reputations. And I really enjoyed the conversation this hour. Though it's hard out there for buyers, but we'll see this spring. And maybe we'll come back in a year and we'll see how far we've gotten and what has changed.
Let's
Kristen Vandenbroel. Kristen Vandenbroel, real estate broker with RE/MAX Plus. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Evan.
Mark Mackey corrected me. Real estate broker with RE/MAX Realty Group.
In Pittsburgh.
Angie Black Brown, Keller Williams Realty. Thank you. Thanks for being here. With a voice like butter. More connections coming up.